Okay, folks. Very good. All right. So first of all, before we go anywhere, I just want to mention that tonight's Chabura is co-sponsored both by an anonymous individual and by Elisa and David Feuerstein and family, both for the same purpose, in memory of Rebbetzin Shendel Gittel Basar Rav Eliezer Chaim, a woman who made a tremendous, tremendous impact on these here parts, as well as well beyond in the United States, David's mother, Allah Shalom. And of course, it's our hope that the Divrei Torah should serve as a means. You'll see there's a specific reason why specifically this particular Chabura, I wanted to acknowledge Rebbetzin Feuerstein, but also at large, just somebody who lives her life, raising her family, and also so many of the families in this area and throughout the United States, the Torah, for the purposes of a continuation of another generation. Such a person should be remembered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael Latov and should serve as a Melitza Yosher for her and her family, as well as for all of Klal Yisrael. So Yehi Zichra Baruch. Okay, let's go over the questions for the week, and I have to be honest, I'm throwing out the first one because of a reason you'll see in a moment. But there are five questions that I put on the schedule, right? Five topics. I themed this week's Chabur is the smattering of questions, your options for the week, around the idea of pardon me, where somebody will be involved in some aspect of davening, and someone will tap you on the shoulder and say, pardon me. These five are actually questions that have happened either here in the building or I've been asked about. And so therefore, in the course of the research that was done, these are actually very common, and some of you may scratch your heads and say, wow, this actually sounds like something that I could see somebody asking you, or I've had this question before. Question number one, I'm in the Sephardi shul, in our shul, which means that we're in one part, a half of our building. We're home to so many various minyanim here in the shul, and one is our Eidot Mizrach minyan. And of course, one of the fundamental differences between Eidot Mizrach and Ashkenazim is the fact that those who daven what we call real Sephardi, they daven every day. We Ashkenazim don't. And so the first question I put on the table tonight is, I'm a Kohen of Ashkenazi descent in our shul, and I'm davening with the Ashkenazim, and a nice man with a mustache comes in, taps me on the shoulder and says, and he makes some hand gesture motion, and then moves his hands as though he wants to wash in some way, shape, or form. He's trying to get me to duchen. I'm davening with Ashkenazim. I'm an Ashkenazi. What should I do? Question number one. Question number two. For this week, is the guy behind me stands a very, very long Shmona Esrei. He takes 20 minutes for each Shmona Esrei, and he makes every single person in front of him wait. In fact, I was late for an appointment because I was going to leave after Mincha, and I had a very important meeting to get to, and because this Yukel was standing behind me, I missed my appointment. Can I pass in front of someone davening Shmona Esrei? Is he responsible to pay for my financial loss if he stands in the way? And also, what should we do in general? How do we get around this problem in totality? So that's question number two. Question number three for your choice pleasure tonight. A person made a family suda in memory of his maternal grandfather who left no sons, which means that this grandson who's making this meal is the first in the generation who's able to recite Kaddish on the Yortzeit. Now, since his parents are alive, the grandson cannot regularly recite Kaddish. And so the whole reason every year he gets together and he makes this Sudas Mitzvah is because he makes a special Marav Minyan afterwards, or maybe that's not the whole reason, but one of the things that happens is that he makes a special Marav Minyan afterwards, and that was so that the meal which is for the Nifter would also be attached to a Mariv, and he, the grandson, would be able to daven for the Yamid at that Mariv. So now as he's about to start, someone else comes over, and he says, I beg your pardon. See, there it is. He says, I'm a Chiv, and he wants the Yamid. Who has the right to the Yamid in that situation? The one who's a real Chiv or not?
Where is the meeting being held?
It's being held, we'll put that on the table if and when we choose that question. Question number four, and by the way, I'm going to start with this question for a reason I'll get to in a minute. My father is sleeping. Should I wake him up to go to shul and beg his pardon? What about to make Kriya Shema? What about to get to Kiddush? What about to get to work? What about to wake him up for somebody else who's waiting for a Marav Minyan, and I know that although he davened, he would have wanted to get up to help that other person out. Do any of these factors come into play? We'll start there, I think, once we get past question number 5, because I think it's important for us to get them all out. And this is the last question. On Simchas Torah, I bought Chasan Torah. I guess it's a shul where they have the minhag of selling it. Everyone else in shul received aliyos except me and the shul's rabbi. Some people in the shul start shepherding me and they say, I beg your pardon, but really, you should give the aliyah to the rabbi. But I think if the rabbi wanted the aliyah, he should have paid for it. And if everybody else thought that he deserved the aliyah, they should have either bought it for him or they should never offered it for auction. Who's right and what should you do? So you got the five questions. These are all legitimate, pardon me, questions, right? But we'll begin with the fourth one, Sarah, because I think it's an important one and I have a specific reason on this particular night why I want to start with that one, and then I'll put them out for a vote rather than letting us all choose which one we want to start with. My father's sleeping. Should I wake him up to get to shul, to make Kriya Shema, to get the Kiddush to work? What do people think? And by the way, as you guys know, bring me a proof.
Did he ever give permission beforehand?
I don't know. Bring me a proof from Chazal. Anything you know. Mendy and the Golem counts, by the way.
Be allowed to from the store,
So the first issue at hand is a famous Gemara. It's a famous story. Like I said, you got to remember your Mendy. If you don't remember your Gemara in Kedushin, you remember your Mendy and the Golem comics. But whichever way it is, Bo Minei Rimir of Ula, they asked Rav Ula a question. This is a Gemara in Kedushin on Daf Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. They asked Rav Ula the following question. Ad Heichan Kibud Avahim. How far does the mitzvah of honoring one's parents go? Samar Lahem, he says, you want to know how far it goes? Tzuru ma'asa ovei kochav mechad be'ashkelon. Go see, there was a Goyish guy living in Ashkelon. V'dama ben Nesina shmo, like you know, Moshe pointed out, his name was Dama ben Nesina. So pam achas, once upon a time, bikshu chachamim prakmatia b'shishim ribo sachar. The people wanted to, they tried to get a business for some sort of, was it 600,000 dollars, let's say. V'yamavteach munach tachas marashot sov shalaviv. The keys to the schor, he had avonim le'ifot, and the keys were left under the head of his father. Velotziero, he didn't wake up his father. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Sholos Rabbi Eliezer, Arechen Kibud Abaim. He asked him, how far does it go? So he said, Tzuhum Ru'um Asobi Kacham Le'aviv Be'ashkel Medam Be'neshina Shemo, Bikshu Mimenu Chachamim Avonim Le'ifot. Right? The Chachamim came along and they asked him to find stones for the Eifot, B'shishim Ribo Star. Right? Or maybe for $600,000, maybe $800,000. Vayamavteach munach tachas merashoso shalaviv, the famous Daman ben Nesina story. Right? And the keys were underneath his father's head, velotziaro. And he didn't bother him, so they kept coming. You know the famous, the way the story goes when you tell it with the right way, right? They came back and offered him more money. And what did he say? No. They came back and offered him more money. And what did he say? No. Right? And then what happened? The next year, what happened? He got his reward, and what happened? Right? No, the para aduma be'edro. He got a para aduma. So then, nechnasu chachma Yisrael etzel. The chachamim came to him, and amar lahem yonei adni bachem ani mevakish mikem komamon shebeholam atem nosnim li. You think $1.6 billion is worth something? Right? We just had the Mega Millions with the 1.6. I could ask. That's chump change for what I could ask to get the Jewish people to buy a para aduma. He says, "Ela ein ani mevakish mikem ela usa mamon chev sadati b'shul kavod abba." The only thing I want, though, is the money that I lost on the deal on the stones for the ephod, right? And that's what happened, right? And so the Gemara ends and says, "V'amar Reb Chanina, uma mi she'ena metzuba ve'osa kach." If this is what somebody who's not commanded, what does that mean? He's not commanded. He's a non-Jew, and it's not one of the sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach too. Honor your parents. It may make sense to do it. It's probably a good idea. He who shall not be named once equipped, right? I'm your father. I brought you into this world and I can take you out. I won't mention who it was, but, you know, let's just say he knew a guy named Noah, right? Vumpa, 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 ding, right? But we won't mention, right? But the bottom line is, it's not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. That issue that he violated is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, but that's neither here nor there, right? So if a non-Jew is not mitzuvah and he's so careful, right? So certainly we who are mitzuvim ve'osim alachas kama v'kama. So Moshe comes along and he says, I know the Dama ben Nesina story, and therefore what? You see that?
You should not be allowed.
You shouldn't be allowed to wake your father up, And so, based on that conclusion, if your father wants to go ahead, and if you need to do something, you probably shouldn't wake your father up, right? Go ahead.
It's a wonderful story. It has something to do with what we're talking about.
Why is that?
It's the financial reward. We're talking about star for a mitzvah.
Okay.
Okay,
so the Ran, the Tosas HaRash, the Nemuke Yosef, and Rabbeinu Yerucham all learn a very valuable lesson from the Dama Ben Asina story. They all learn that you can't wake up your father if there'll be a financial loss. Right? Is that true? La Halacha, is that the way we paskin? So Moshe Islis, Ashkenazic Posek, paskin is in Shulchan Aruch, it's in Yoredeya Simon Reish Mem. Right? And he turns around and he says, V'yesh Omrim, Dimrotza Lizrok Moshel Ben Layam, Diyachot Lamono. Right, if your father wants to pick up all your finances and throw them into the ocean, it's very similar to this situation. So he says, right, you can hold him back from doing that. The understanding that a person has to have is the financial obligation for the cost of kibbutz av aim is on whom? Who pays for kibbutz av aim? The father. It could be paskin la halacha that the obligation comes from the parent, the financial obligation. And so therefore, maybe you're not supposed to lose money within the process. So it seems that the Ramah holds that there's a difference between incurring a loss and making a profit. You're not obligated to incur a loss, right? If your parents want to take what you have and throw it out the window, you're not obligated to incur a loss as a result of keeping kibbutz av aim. But as far as making a profit, so maybe you should forego making a profit. Right, you can wake the father up if you're going to lose money, but if you're not going to gain money, then says the Ran, you're not going to if you're going to suffer a financial setback, then you're allowed to wake the father up. Alternatively, the Ran offers a different possibility to explain the difference. There's a difference between causing tzar to a parent, which one's not allowed to do. And honoring a parent, you're not allowed to cause pain to a parent, right? At all costs. But if it's just a question of not showing honor, then we can get into the discussion of, you know, is that Michel Av or Michel Bain?
Wouldn't a father say, you know, wake me up for this big deal?
Oh, so that's the big question, right? And the Chayyadim actually brings up your point, and he says there's a difference between loss and potential loss of a chance to profit. Right? In other words, if you lose a chance to profit, that's a difference. And he adds, by the way, if the father's going to kick you and say, silly boy, you should have woken me up. Right? So in such a situation, you have a responsibility to wake the parent up.
Isn't it Av Mocho
Koda? Huh?
A father can be Mocho Koda.
Sure, but he has to be able to be Mocho. Right? But you don't know about that beforehand. So the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid actually turns around and he makes a similar comment. This is in Shimon, Shin Lamed Zayin of the Sefer Chassidim, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. He says, HaBen Shebal Yado Revach. What if a child has an opportunity to do a business deal? V'aviv Yashin, and the father is sleeping. So Lamadnu Midama Ben Nesina, we learn, like Moshe Amberder said, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid living in the 15th century, turns around like Moshe Amberder, the 16th century, I'm sorry, like Moshe Amberder, who lives a couple of centuries later, right? And they both say the same thing. We learn from Dama Ben Nesina what you're supposed to do. Avon bo revach li aviv v'nifsad aviv, right? What happens if the father had the chance, right? The guy comes to the door with a chance to give his father a deal, right? And now the father loses. Ukshamekitz mitzdar yoser al shaloi kitzo. Right? Now he's going to be upset. You gave me an opportunity. V'haben yodea das aviv sheshamech kishamech kitzo b'shvil oso davar mitzvah la kitzo. He says that if you know that the father's going to kill you, because here it is, somebody came along, the Ed McMahon shows up at your house. Remember, why does Ed McMahon show up at your house? Tell Mr. Fish.
He's
Publishers Clearinghouse, right? So Ed McMahon shows up and says, sorry, my father's sleeping. Ed says, you get him here or else. Sorry, my father's sleeping. There was a non-Jewish guy in Ashkelon once upon a time. Your father's going to say, Ed McMahon came to the house holding the big check. You have to let him in. You have to wake the father up. Why? Says Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, Me'achashav is Sameachosa. The father was going to be happy. Ed McMahon just gave you a check, right? Right? So therefore, a person has a responsibility. What does this do for our question? So, if the father were to be happy about it, then all of a sudden, you have a responsibility. Now, in our question, right, now all of a sudden we have to ask the question, how much of a shulgoer is the father? Maybe the father wants to get up to go to shul. Right? Maybe he wants to get up to go to shul. Maybe he doesn't like to daven at the ever-popular kaisel. Right? And I'm not talking about the wailing wall. I'm talking about the one that wails in the house. Right? When we were in yeshiva. So the first time I davened in the kibbutz in Keren Biyana one Shabbos morning. Don't ask me why. Don't ask me how. So I get back to yeshiva. And I bump into my friend, who today is a dayan in the northern part of Israel. His name is Netanel Berkovich, Rav Netanel Berkovich. So he looks at me and he says, "Hitpalalta yom bakrisel." And first of all, Netanel, his name wasn't Nesanel, it was Netanel. So I asked him, "Maza krisel?" He's a krisel. Anachnu nimsem achshav b'tzomet Yavne. So he looks at me and he says to me, "Meinchayom Schwarz." He says, "Bakrisel." You know, and he points to the wall. I said, "No, I was in the kibbutz." So he says, "Oh," he says, "Atalo shamata la bituya se." You never heard about this expression, bakrisel? In Israeli culture, and by the way, it's in our culture as well. When you don't go to daven with the minyan, you assume that you daven at the side of your bed near the dorms. So I went back and told all the American guys, "Hey, guess what? Do you ever hear this one?" And of course, every guy in the dorm is like, "You haven't heard that one? You've been sitting here." I guess I went to minyan. I never heard it before, right? So that was that. So if the father, you know, is going to be upset that he missed minyan, I know a guy. Who may or may not be a member of... Well, I don't mind embarrassing him a drop. He's a member of our shul. So his father once told me many years ago, right, that there was one day that the father took his son somewhere. And the father tells the son, tells his grandson, he sees the grandson, who's probably about 5 or 6 years old at the time, he sees the grandson sees the grandfather putting on tefillin. They were on a trip somewhere. He says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm putting on tefillin." He says, "Oh, my father never does that." So the father's father goes, "Are you kidding me?" He says, "Hey, my kid doesn't put on tefillin." And then it dawns on him. The father never misses minyan. The kid was too young to be in shul every day. That's why he never thought his father never wears tefillin. Now he's with Zadie. Zadie all of a sudden shows him the process. So if the little kid had to wake that father up to get to shul, right, you say to me, he's as happy as the other guy is when Ed McMahon shows up to the house. But what if you don't know, right? You're not really so clear. Is there still a mitzvah to wake the father? So here's the way the Chai Adam has some fun. So the Chai Adam in Chelak Aleph, Kal Samach Zayin, Sif Yud Aleph, brings down, he says, he adds a one little extra word. He says, V'chein k'shemekitzo l'aleches l'beis ha'knesses o l'dvar mitzvah. He says, if you're waking up the father to go to shul or to do a mitzvah, right, shakulam chayavim b'chvod ha'makom. He says, we're all chayav. We all have a responsibility to show respect to our fathers, to our Kadosh Baruch Hu, our Father in Heaven. And so therefore, it's not just that it depends on what the father wants to do. We're all chayav. We all have a responsibility to show respect to our Father in Heaven. And so therefore, whether the father knows it or not, he has a responsibility to get up and go to shul. He has a responsibility to do and keep the mitzvahs. So I mentioned before that the Chabur is sponsored in memory of Rebbetzin Feuerstein. A sefer came out a couple of weeks ago, written by Rebbetzin Feuerstein's son-in-law, the great Gaon Harav Daniel Feldman. This is the fourth in his series called Bina Besvarim, Volume 4, B'nai Bina, which is dedicated in part to the memory of Rebbetzin Feuerstein. And there in B'nai Bina, on page 62, Rabbi Feldman, who's graced us here before, he points out that even if the father's not interested in getting up and going to shul, the father is not interested in making sosman kriya shema. The father is not interested in making tefillah on time. You still have a responsibility to wake the father up. Why is that? Because even though he tells you, "I'm not interested," it's a mitzvah, and that's the way to go. And by the way, the Bar Hitev, Rabbi Feldman says, in his commentary in the little bottom letters of the Shulchan Aruch, in Yoridei Sim, in Reish Mem, Sif Tezayin, actually points out this differentiation. It's not dependent on what the father wants, right? It's dependent on the fact that we all have the responsibility to show respect to our Father in Heaven. However, Rabbi Feldman does add that there's a difference that comes out because of this responsibility. It's not just a blanket heter. He quotes from the Vayivarech David, Shalos Tshuva Simon Reish Yud, who brings down that this doesn't apply to a mitzvah like the poor person at the door. Why? Because you don't have to give tzedakah. That's called a mitzvah kiyumis. right? When the opportunity comes. So if somebody knocks on the door and says to you, can you wake your father up? Because I want to ask him for some tzedakah. There's the difference. Why is that? Because the father can fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah. He doesn't give it to every single person who comes along. And so therefore, maybe over there, a person does not have the responsibility to wake his father, since the father does not have a responsibility to respond, right? The Menuchas Emes, which is written by Harav Mordechai Gross Shalita, the Gavad, the Rav HaRashi, the Beis Din of the Beis Din Chanichei HaYeshivas, and lest you think that Rav Mordechai Gross is just some crazy guy in Bnei Brak, and just let me add to you that there was a potential, and it may actually be so, that when Rabbi Belsky passed away, Rabbi Ganak announced to the Mashgichim at, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Ganak announced to the Mashgichim at the OU that they replaced Rabbi Belsky with two great minds, Hagonar of Usher Weiss, who we all know very well, and we've mentioned him in the past, and Rav Mordechai Gross, right, who is an unbelievable machaber of incredible numbers of Sfarim, very, very right-wing in his approach to certain things, and yet on the other side, he is involved in that. He is the Yoshev Rosh of the Hechsher of Tenuva in Israel, like when they deal with issues over there. So in a Sefer Menuchas Emes, Rav Gross brings down that if the father doesn't have to keep all the chumras in the world. So like, for instance, if you want to know, should I wake my father up to make Magen Avraham time, right? The answer is, he says, if there's another Zman, you have a right to do what? You tell, let him go ahead and keep, and unless he's particularly specific about always making Magen Avraham, don't wake him up until Vilna Gaon time, right? So a person needs to understand that. So again, as far as our first question was concerned tonight, we asked the question of whether you should wake up the father to do a mitzvah and beg his pardon. So the halacha seems pretty clear that from even though Dama ben Nesina, it sounds like he didn't want to wake up the father, but we saw the potential from the Sefer Hasidim is the father feels he's going to have a loss, and from Mechayalim says it doesn't matter whether the father is interested or not. This is a Dvar Mitzvah, but that's only true for a Dvar Mitzvah Chiyuvis, and it's only true if this is the only way for him to be Yotzei, right? It's not a Chumra. Then the child has a responsibility to wake the parent. It goes without saying. And Rabbi Feldman writes this very clearly. If there's an opportunity to have somebody else to do it, who's not a child, that's still better. To ask somebody else, because then you don't run into the problem in the first place. Okay, so that's question number one. So now, 1 out of 5 done. What does everyone else want us to go to? We have the Chas and Torah Shaila. That was number 5. We have the Shaila about the guy who made the Suda, and then the other guy says, I'm a Chiyuv. We have the duchening Shaila for the Sephardi Ashkenazi, and we have the guy who's standing the long Shmon Esrei. That one? The guy who stands the long Shmon Esrei? Okay, so again, the guy behind me stands a very long Shmon Esrei. Right, okay. And he takes 20 minutes, and he makes everyone in front of him stand and wait. I was late for an appointment because of him. Can I pass in front of him? Can I pass in front of someone who's davening Shmon Esrei? And is he responsible to pay for my financial loss if he's standing in the way and I can't get out? Right? And he does this on purpose. So what do people think?
On purpose?
With the whole issue. Let's start with the whole issue.
Who got there first?
Huh?
Who got there first?
What difference does it make? Flesh out to Shaila.
Because if I'm sitting inside the row by the beam,
right?
And I'm standing Shmon Esrei. Some guy then walks over and stands at the end of the row and blocks me in, and comes later after I'm already diving there. He knows that I gotta get out for whatever. And he stood there. His Shmon Esrei is forfeit.
Because?
Because it was my chazon.
How do I handle the situation?
Knock him over.
Knock him over. everyone, what?
Cars in the parking lot.
Right, so he's in the middle of my cars in the parking lot. Can I go in and tell everyone to get out and move it? So let's start at the beginning with the Shaila. Let's start with the Mechaber. The Mechaber in Or HaChaim, Simon Kuf Beis Sif Dalet, brings down, also Lavor Keneged Amos Palalim B'Sof Dalet Amos, that when somebody's davening Shmon Esrei, you're not allowed to pass within 4 amos of the person, about 7 feet, right? B'davka Lefneim, but that's specifically in front of the person. Ha'Betzideim Mutter, but you can pass on the sides. And the question I have to ask you is why? What's the issue? Why can't you pass in front of them? Huh? Is that the reason? You wanted to say something else? Oh, so the truth of the matter is that if I went with the straight up Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah in Sifkat and Tesvav over here in Siman Kuf Beis says what Yossi says, which is that the main issue over here, the rest of you, before you decide that, you know, you're giving up hope because I agreed with Yossi, just wait a second. But Yossi says, just like the Chafetz Chaim, that the issue is that we don't want to ruin his Kavana. However, the Chaye Yadam, Rav Avram Gansrid, right? So he comes along and says what the rest of you said. He says that, no, you have to understand that when the person's davening Shmona Esrei, he's connecting with the Shechina, right? And if you pass in front of him, you're severing the connection. It's like, you know, if you have I guess there's some sort of wire, and you're breaking up the wireless reception or something like that when you pass in between. By the way, Nafkamina, huh?
The same idea, just.
No, it's not the same idea, and here's why. The one difference may be, can I pass on the sides? If it's a question of severing the Shechina, maybe that's only an issue if the person passes in front of you. Now the connection's severed. But if it's a question of distraction...
Maybe the Shechina's above?
Maybe, but we assume Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere.
So
right. So, however, there are poskim who make the differentiation and say that may be the reason why you're allowed to pass on the sides. But I can tell you, when people walk on the sides, when I'm davening, and I have that awkward seat in the front, which has the row, right, and to come in the morning, it is distracting. And they're not in front of me. In front of me is the piece of glass. But I can tell you that it's distracting. And by the way, the rules over here that we're talking about in regard to Shmona Esrei, so they apply to Shema Yisrael as well. And by the way, to Kaddish says the Shari Tshuva. And by the way, it follows that it doesn't matter what's in front of, you know, like, don't worry, I'll take a shtender and I'll put it between us. Well, that doesn't make a difference if I'm moving in front of the person, unless your shtender, unless the guy's shtender is like, you know, really tall and filled all the way down. Yeah, it would have to be. So the answer is, would 10 tefachim make a difference? Like, I don't know if any of you have ever been in the Reibel, but Rabbi Taitz's shtender in the Reibel Beis Medrash is like straight up 10 tefachim with no, you know, piece in the, you know, no open gap. My shtender over here in the shul has a gap. This shtender has a gap, right? But Rabbi Taitz's shtender in Reibel is like a solid piece. Yeah, but if I moved in front or whatever, if it's a question of the Shechina, right? So that maybe you could argue that, you know, there's an official gap over there. But if it's a question of distraction, trust me, if something's moving in front of you, whether it's got a 10 tefachim or not, yeah, very good, right? It's not, whether it's got a 10 tefachim or not, if you see something coming at you, it's gonna set you off, right? This, of course, tells you something else. The Bi'ar Halacha comes along over here and he says, and this also means that if the person covers his face, right? You see, there are people in shul and they daven Shmona Esrei. So, like, the talus is like way in front of them, or I used to have a camper who used to describe it as he used to say, "Oh, my sister's a chaling girl." You know, if the girls sit there, you know, and they daven like this, right? And so maybe that's a solution to the problem. Why is that? Because if I have my head buried in the sitter like this, or if my talus is so far over my head, which I believe, by the way, is the makor for Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is a discussion also we can have for another time, right? So think about it. You get all sorts of things when you come here, right? So, one second. So in those cases, why did Jedi Knights cover their heads? It's Kavana, right? It's a Beferish Bi'ur Halacha, right? The Bi'ur Halacha in this situation, what? If your talus is... Huh? Of course he didn't, because since when does Hollywood ever give credit to anything where it's deserved? You know, so but the idea, if the talus is way over a person's eyes, maybe that will not ruin his kavana, and so therefore that would not be a difficulty. So suggests the Chafetz Chaim and the Bi'ur Halacha over here. Now, So it depends. Eyes that are closed tend to open.
Oh, yeah.
But this, by the way, joking aside about the Jedi's, we do this at one point in time where we specifically use a talus, right? Which we don't rely on this, right? Why does everyone under this? My kids come running into shul. Got to cover your head with the talus. On Yom Kippur, you saw this, right? You may have seen also. I told my kids, I'm davening, this year I davened with the Fidiyamah and one of the Minyanim. So when it came time for Duchling, so my boys are used to coming in. So my older boy brings in my younger boy. They get close to stand under. And then they both decided, we're not doing that. So they went out, got a talus, covered themselves over with the talus, just so that, you know, Jack and Paul should not, they shouldn't be staring at Jack and Paul during the duchening. You remember? Right? So I found it kind of funny. So I said to my son, you didn't wear talus the whole davening. He says, I'm not supposed to wear talus the whole davening, but I'm not supposed to stare at the Kohanim. I didn't. So I said, why'd you come? Why don't you just cover your eyes? He says, come on. It's cool. You're not going to stare, right? And then I think what he meant, it's cool, is it gave him an excuse to wear a talus, but that's for another time, right? And that's what they did. So we are all particular, and we know that when you put the talus over your head, it's an extra protection, which may make a difference between that and closing your eyes. So now, what happens to the guy? That's the background and the facts, right? The background and the facts are a person's not supposed to pass. The reason he's not supposed to pass is either because it severs the connection with the Shekhinah, or more likely because, at least the way the Mishnah Berurah brings it down, is because it's going to ruin the Kavanah. And so, technically speaking, the Bir Halacha, the Mishnah Berurah says, if the person takes precautions, then maybe we don't have a problem. Yeah, but what if he didn't take precautions? Right? And this is more likely, right? So if a person doesn't pay attention, and we ask them, right, and he still creates a bottleneck, people can't pass. So the person should be told, says the Eishal Avram, the Shalos Tshuvos B'Tzel HaChachma, right? He should be told to move to another place. Listen to this. The Debet Sina Rav, the B'Tzel HaChachma, whose Yortzeit is this coming week. I did not plan that when I planned the shir. But the B'Tzel HaChachma writes in the Tshuva, and it's there it is. It's in Chelek Vav, Simonim Lamed and Lamed Aleph. The B'Tzel HaChachma writes, even if it's in the middle of Shmona Esrei, you should walk over to the guy and tell him, excuse me, you're in the aisle, we can't get through. And you know what the guy is supposed to do?
Jump.
He's supposed to get up? No! He's supposed to get up, walk over to the side, and move over.
Does he start over?
By the way, this should not be crazy. We discussed this once before, 2 years ago in the Sukkah Shalosh Shudas. Do you remember when? In what context? If a guy brings his kid to shul, and the kid is creating a disturbance in shul, and he's saying Shmoneh Esrei, it may have been 3 or 4 years ago. I'm getting old much faster than my brain is, right? So it's all in there. We all can't daven Shmoneh Esrei. So what does he do? He picks up the kid. Now the kid's screaming louder, and the kid, none of us can daven. What's he supposed to do? He's supposed to take the kid up and leave. But I'm in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. You know how many times I hear that?
But that's a different situation. There he's preventing other people from dominating.
No,
here he's preventing other people from leaving dominating.
Yeah, you can argue that.
So the answer is, if he's creating a disturbance for everybody else, sure. The B'Tzel HaChachma writes that he has a responsibility in the middle of its tefillah to move out of the way. Rabbi Neustadt, Rav Daniel Neustadt, the great Ub Beis Din of Detroit, the author of the Weekly Halacha, quotes this halacha, and he quotes others to support the same position.
But is that different? It's a board. What if it's just one individual? What if one guy?
If you're in the aisle, I don't care if it's one person. The guy who's standing in the aisle. Right? Even if it's one person.
You know, so it's not tikkun, it's a bura, because it's an individual. He still has shemun moshmasay to allow one guy to go out?
Yeah, that's the way the post can bring down. Now, so that's true if he's over there. What about Yossi's case? He's in his spot, I'm in mine. Is it ever mutter to pass in front of a person davening shemun esrei, and he's in his right makom? So Rabbi Yashiv, this is not, he's brought down in the Ha'oros on Masech Debrachas, on Daf Chav Zayin Amid Aleph, he says that if I have a tzorech mitzvah, right? I have a tzorech mitzvah. I have to go somewhere. I have to go to bris. Right? My wife needs me home. She's begging me to get home. She needs me to help out with, I had this,
I have to find the guy.
You have to find the guy for psicha. Right? And he says that if the person who needs to pass in front of the other person is doing so for a tzorech mitzvah, he says you can pass in front of a person who's not out in the aisle. Why is that? He says the whole reason why we don't pass today, says Rabbi Yashiv, is primarily because of kavana. He says, how many people have kavana anyway? Right? We started talking about it 2 weeks ago, right? We're talking about Shmoneh Esrei with the OCD guy. He says, eh! And as far as the separating the person from the Shekhinah, right? He's separating a person from the Shekhinah, it's a tzorech mitzvah, right? So therefore it should be mutter. Because causing you to be separate from the Shekhinah, says Rabbi Yashiv, shows that I lack derech eretz. But there's no derech eretz when? When we're dealing with kavod shamayim. And so therefore, Rabbi Yashiv brings down that even if he's standing in that situation, he's in his place, but I have to go for a tzorech mitzvah, I'm allowed to pass in front of him. Rabbi Neustadt adds to this, and he says that in extenuating circumstances for a mitzvah overis, right, a mitzvah that can't be fulfilled at the current time, I won't be able to do it later, or to avoid an embarrassing situation, you can pass in front of a person davening Shmona Esrei. So he gives a whole list of examples, says Rabbi Neustadt. You have a baby who's crying. I have to pass in front of the guy saying Shmona Esrei, right? I'm davening in my row. Right, the baby's crying. I gotta pass all those guys, and and they're all in their seats. Right, I have to go to the bathroom. That's our mitzvah. Right, I have to go to the bathroom.
Well,
it's covered up bris. It's covered up bris. I have to give a shear. Right, huh?
Sometimes that's even harder.
Sometimes that. Yes, that's Rabbi Neustadt's point. I have to give a shear. Right, I get called out because although he's davening privately, they need me to make a minyan next door. Right, so I'm needed. Right? I get called up for an aliyah. And if I don't go, people are going to assume that there's some challenge to my pedigree. Right?
If somebody from the Sephardic minyan calls an Ashkenazi out from the other room.
To go, come and duchen. You want me to cover that shayla? So you want me to do crossovers? Crossovers are great, but a much longer issue. But the short of it would be yes. Right? Even if I'm doing it to avoid a substantial monetary loss, says Rabbi Neustadt. Right, or the fact that it's going to lead to an argument, right? There, my mom's going to shoot me dead. She's waiting outside for God knows how she has to get to work, right? So I'm allowed to pass by, but only if the situation, says Rabbi Neustadt, the person should cover his face with the talus or daven with his eyes shut and not be disturbed. So therefore, says Rabbi Neustadt, if you're going to stand long Shmona Esrei, what do you learn from here? You should take a lesson from Obi-Wan Kenobi, right?
If I can hop over the bench, which is not a cover for the base at that
What? You should worry about the kavod of the person of the Beis HaKnesses and not the kavod of the person, right? So now, Rav Yitzchak Cohen used to announce us. I spent the summers when I was in high school learning in Moresh Eskola with Rav Yitzchak Cohen, who today is one of the Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University. So Rabbi Cohen is a fiery individual, very strong. So he used to talk, but he used to notice everything. And that was one of the great things of spending time with him in the summer. So he would often point things out just parenthetically. So I remember one morning after davening, he leans over to the... We used to daven in the mornings in a trailer, right? And the front of the trailer was east. And, you filled out. We were about 40, 50 guys. This is how I know Rabbi Marcus, by the way. We go all the way back to those times. In fact, a lot of the guys that I parade in here are guys that, these great Talmidei Chacham, and we all started learning under Rabbi Yitzchak Cohen and Rabbi Willig, and Rabbi Mordechai Willig Shalita. So I remember Rabbi Yitzchak Cohen leads over to us one morning, and he says, "Good morning. If you're going to stand along Shmona Esrei, you should stand in the front of the trailer. If you say a short Shmona Esrei, stay in the back." So it caused like a whole tumult among the guys. And he says, "Thank you very much. Have a good day." Right? So a whole debate broke out among the 40 guys. Is Rabbi Cohen trying to tell us that those guys deserve to be on the Mizrach Mat? Right? They get seized because they say a longish one essay? So finally, like 7 hours later, after Maariv, someone had the guts to go up and ask him. He says, like, "Rebbe, is it a din in the Mizrach?" So he said, "No, it's a din in being able to take 3 steps back." Right? So I'll never forget it. Like, for 7 hours, we were talking about this, that, in the middle of the basketball game, and the middle of morning Seder and afternoon Seder. We learned a lot there. Right? Finally, at 10 o'clock at night, 10:30, when we were finished Maariv, someone got the guts to ask him. He says, "You sat with this question all day. Why didn't anyone ask me?" Right? But it was an important issue. I wonder in my head if this is the makor for the Mizrach Mat. Like the idea that, the holy people go to the east wall and why it became a covet. It's always funny to me. I don't know, but it's always funny to me when we look at the, how Jewish traditions develop. It's like, why is Kriya Saksuba the number one, the number two kibud at a wedding? You know why? Because it shows, because a monkey could do it, right? A monkey could read the ksuba. The whole point of reading the ksuba is to make a distinction. You could announce scores from ESPN. It would serve the same function as reading the ksuba. So the guy who got the job of reading the ksuba, it showed that he didn't really care, right? Like he's a humble person. He didn't have to have this kibud or this kibud or this kibud. So what happened? It became the mechubad dika kibud because it shows that you're a humble individual. Like we work backwards. The other source of that is the Ketoris, right? Trumas Hadeshen. What's Trumas Hadeshen? Right? Cleaning. So my wife says to me, I'm a chabad you taking out the garbage. Right? Every Sunday night and every Wednesday night, and when Box Day is on Wednesday, my wife is mechabed me extra. This was an extra week. I got three kibbutim. Right? No, sometimes I mechabed my son with the opportunity. Right? Sometimes he gets glila, and sometimes he gets galgalgala. Right? So I say, right? So the fact of the matter is, you know, in the Beis Hamikdash, why did this become like the choice thing? The answer is because it's taking out the garbage, right? But you show that, like, wow, I want that opportunity. I show the humility. People used to kill for the chance. So I wonder if the Mizrach became the Mizrach that way also. Why? Because you stood a long short issue. Why does everyone else have to wait? Teretz is, you know, to be able to move them out. So again, in the short of it, the begging the part, and really what should happen is if a guy knows he's going to stand a long Shmon Esrei, and this was Rabbi Kohn's point to us, if you know you're going to stand a long Shmon Esrei, why? Why are you going to be Matriach everybody else? Right? And you have a responsibility. Stand in a place where you're not going to be Matriach. Try to stand closer to the front. Don't hold everybody else up. But Rabbi Neustadt says that if it's going to be the case that you are interrupting people, nobody has to suffer financial loss. If you didn't move, though, right? Here's the interesting piece. If I didn't move and I missed my meeting, and I have taina to him, I have a claim against the guy, I don't think I have much of a claim. Because really, I'm going to him because I'm an Am Aretz, and I didn't know I could have said to him, can you move, please? Right? You know, he should have moved anyway. Okay, so that's the second issue. Should we try for one more? Okay, so now we've got two out of five done. We have the Chasam Torah, we have the Bruce Shaila, and we have the Ahmed, right? Should we do the Chiyuv? Okay, so here's a funky Shaila. I'm going to add to it just to make the Shaila fun. And one of you in the room is going to smile at me and tell me that's not what happened, right? So. A guy goes ahead and he makes a suda smitzah. We have people do this all the time, right? So a person is making a suda, he's making a siyum, whatever the case may be, right? And he's making the siyum. Why is he making the siyum? Because it's his grandparents' yard site, right? It's the grandparents' yard site. And he wants the opportunity to dam maariv, so he's going to make a siyum afterwards, right? And then he's going to have a maariv minyan, and this way he'll chapois the amud. So Yossi says to me, where is he making it? So I'm going to add your shayla into our story. Right? As he's about to daven maariv, one guy walks in, 11th guy, even if he's in the top 10, I don't think it makes a difference, but he says, pardon me, I'm a chiv, can I have the amid? Right? So, wait a minute. What do you mean, can you have the amid? Right? So, you know, the shayla is, do I have to give him the amid? He's a chiv. I'm only I'm a person observing the Eretz, but he's got like a real chiv. Or as we would say, not really, we're all chiyuvim, but he has schus kadima. Does he have schus kadima in this case? Or do we say that no? The whole purpose of the minyan was for this yartzeit. I made the minyan and I have the taina. Which way does it go? So I add another component. What if I'm making a tikkun in the shul? Right? This is why your shiloh was a good one before. So yes, he says, Rabbi, where is the minyan? So I'll fix it a little bit and make it more fun. Right? I'm coming to shul. I'm fearing tikkun. But it's the shul's minyan. Right? And I think it's a regular one of the shul's minyanim. Does that make a difference in our shaila at all?
Well, it depends if the guy's a member or not.
Okay, why yes and why no?
Because it's the person, if you're a member of the shul, you would trump that guy's...
What if that guy's got a real chiyuv? I don't have a real chiyuv, but I'm a member and he's not. Huh? Diem achus to diem, but how should we say, right? What is diem? So we'll ask her. What do you think, right?
I think according to the published list that was never published in this shul, the person who has the real chiyuv goes first.
Why? Why? What's the basis? And does that make a difference in our shaila?
Well, so it's his kaddish that. It's his kaddish that.
Let me read you a Rashi and Chumash. We'll start with Rashi and Chumash, right? It's always fun to see like all this comes down to Shtai Mikra. So we read Parshas Pinchas a couple of months ago, and Rashi over there brings down in Perek Chav Zayin Pasuk Tez Zayin, Moshe Rabbeinu is about to die, right? And right before he dies, right, Hashem tells him, go up on the mountain, and Moshe says, Yivkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos Ish Alaida. You should go ahead and choose somebody. So Rashi comes along over here. He says, "Look, kiven sheshama Moshe she'amar lo hamakom tein nachlas tzlafchad libnosev." As soon as Moshe Rabbeinu heard the rules, remember, where did Moshe Rabbeinu come from? He had heard this whole shaila from the daughters of tzlafchad, and Moshe, you know, he didn't remember in the Salma Hamimenu Halacha, right? So Amar, he says, "He giya shah she'et batzarachai." Right? When Moshe Rabbeinu heard that, God said, hey, you know, even if there are no sons that get the Yerusha, let it go to the daughters. Right? So Moshe says, oh, God feels like it's important for children to be able to collect up from their parents. Right? So I'm going to try that as well. She'yir shubanai is gedulasi, that my children should do what? They should inherit my station. It's an important principle. So I'm like, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says, no, not so fast. Right? Lo kein, also b'machshava lefanai. That's not the thought that came up in front of me. Kedai hu Yehoshua li toskar shimusho, shalom mashmito cha'ol. Yehoshua deserves it. He stayed there the whole time. V'zeo sh'amar Shlomo, no tzarteina yochal pirya. Right? The one who, and listen to the language, in Mishlei, no tzar te'ena, the one who creates, the one who cultivates the fig tree, right? Yochal piriyah, that's the one who gets the ability to do what? To eat the figs. Now let's go back to our Shaila, right? In this storyline, who is the no tzar te'ena? The grandson, right? He made the minyan, right? So the Aderet, and of course in our shul, the Aderet carries a lot of weight. Why? Because Rabbanit Tites, whose maiden name is Rabinovich, right? Who was the daughter of the other twin, the Aderet. Aderet stands for Eliyahu David Rabinowitz Teumim. There were two twins whose names were Rabinovich. Right, they were both big Talmidei Chachamim, right? And one was Eliyahu David, Rabinowitz Teumim. He was a fiery individual, well recognized as an individual in Europe. So when I believe it was Rav Shmuel Salanter, I may be wrong, but I think when Rav Shmuel Salanter was very, very old, they were worried he wasn't going to live. So they decided to appoint an assistant rabbi. So they ran all over Europe to find an assistant rabbi, and they decided that one who was going to be an assistant rabbi, who was a youngster, was the Aderet. So they bring him to Eretz Yisrael, they're going to make him the assistant rabbi in the Yeshiv. Right? Pretty serious guy. In fact, the Maharsham writes in a tshuva that he has a tshuva from the Aderet. I just heard this story, again, the storyline, the background, from Rav Asher Weiss when we were together 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago. So he reminds us of the storyline. I've heard it from Rav Shachter many times. The Aderet wrote to the Maharsham, and he says, I'm going to be a Rav in Eretz Yisrael. Can I ever take a vacation? Like, are there certain times where I'm allowed to close the door and tell people I need a rest? I need to learn, I need a rest, whatever. So the Maharsham writes, and he says, yes, you are allowed to take a break. But it's just not my practice to do so. I want to make it clear to people, right, that my door is always open. Because, you know, you're here for Am Yisrael. You have, and if Am Yisrael has needs, so that's the way it is. So I think that minhag, that Maharsham is very well known among congregants all over the world, right? They paskin like the Maharsham, which is why rabbis all, you know, in the age of the cell phone, the rabbis always have a responsibility to be available 24/7, right? But neither here nor there, the Aderet was a very serious individual, and when he makes comments, they are very worthwhile. Nebuchadnezzar, it's a sad story, because the Aderet gets to Eretz Yisrael, he's there to be the assistant, right, to be Mamale Makom. And he died before the person that he was there to replace. In fact, his senior rabbi had to be Maspit him. It's a very sad story. Anyway, the Aderet writes that if somebody gathers a minion, right, it's more his minion even than somebody who has a yard site, right? He takes precedence. He's the one who gathers the minion. He is begeder notzar te'ina yochal piria. He's the one who created the minion, and so therefore he's able to eat it, right? And that, by the way, leads the Mata Ephraim in the commentary Aleph HaMagen to also say that if we put a minion together in a house, right? So the one in the house who owns the house where the minion takes place, he has chus kadima. Why? He provided. He's the notzar te'ina yochal piria, and I believe therefore, right, that is true for membership, and why membership has its privileges, right? And why is that? You become a, when you're a member of a shul today under the system we use today, in the olden days, everybody paid membership. There was none of this like Bava Maisalach, I don't want to pay, I'm done, all that other stuff. You know, you came to a place, you paid the membership. That was part of, it wasn't just a membership for the shul, it was a membership for the living in the community. So all tzrachim of the community, everybody had, it was a levy, it was a tax. But today, under the system we have today, you become a partial owner in the process, which gives you schus kadinama because you are the notzar teina, and therefore you get the credit of Yochal Piria. But the Elif HaMagen carries this further. He takes it even further. He says that when you create the situation for the Kaddish, you also take a schus kadima. And why is that? He says, where would that be? This comes up often. When I was a kid growing up, so very often, if I were at a minyan, when I was young, so I grew up in a town called Woodmere, Rabbi Billet Shul, right? So now Rabbi Billet Shul has a minyan every 6.5 minutes. I think that's an exaggeration, but I think every half an hour they're davening over there. From Nates, right? Sometimes earlier than Nates. Alos, right? Sometimes earlier than Alos, okay? Right? All the way through to 9 o'clock in the morning. There's a minyan at the Yom Yisrofun. You can find a minyan every half an hour, right? But when we were growing up, so there was one in the 6 o'clock hour, there was one in the 7 o'clock hour, depending on when LIRR changed the schedule, because it was the train minion. And if we were off from school, so we were allowed to make a minion on our own, right? And Rabbi Billet encouraged us to do so, which is something I think we should encourage our kids to do as well. We finally have enough kids, we have a critical mass, then we should also encourage them. We'll make a minion, we'll open the doors, we'll go ahead and push for that. So Rabbi Billet used to let us have our minyan over there, and you always needed, if it was a laning day, someone had to lean. So there's always one guy would come over and say, oh yeah, you lean, do you mind if I say the Kaddish? I don't care, right? I don't know any better. Says the Elif HaMagen, that's incorrect, right? And now sometimes people will come up to us in shul, sometimes they lean in their first minyan, says, someone come in, I'm saying Kaddish, do you mind? The Elif HaMagen says, no, it's my schus. I have schus kadima over that guy if I leaned. Why? He's saying Kaddish. I have schus kadima. Why? So Elif HaMagen brings down. He says, I was the notzer teina, right? The whole reason why we give the Kaddish over to somebody else, this is also a common misunderstanding that people have. Kaddish is not something that goes to the Yasom. He has the first schus for it. Kaddish is an opportunity for Kiddush Shmo Barabim. He causes the a chance to be Mekaddish Em Shamayim. If he's doing so because of a schus for a niftar, so then it's a schus aliyas neshama. Can you find a bigger schus than being creating Kiddush Hashem in a public environment? That's what Kaddish is, right? But if I get that right, says the Elif HaMagen, if a Rav gives a shir, right, and then he wants to say Kaddish afterwards, so he created that right. So he is also begeder notzar teina yochal piria. So as I'm looking over this Elif HaMagen, I you get to see the brilliance of Moreno Harav Tait Shlita, complete total, just in his sicha skula. And it takes 14 years to just wake up and figure it out. 14 years ago, right, on Shmini Atzeres, I think it was my first year here in the shul, right. So it's already 15 years ago. Okay, be ready. Yeah, right. After my first year in the shul, my grandmother was nifter on Shmini Atzeres, right. It happened to be that was the first day that we learned the very first Mishnah in Mishnah Yom HaSaiko. It happened to be, I decided that we in the shul were going to take on the Mishnah Yom HaSaiko. Fine. I find out after Yontif that my grandmother was Nifter. I went out to my mother. My mother has only one sister, no brothers. So as we're getting ready to, my parents are in Woodmere at the time, and as we're getting ready to go to Levaya, so my mother leans over to me, she says, look, your father has obligations, and sometimes he's not going to make a minyan all the time. But you're a rabbi. And by the way, you're also fanatic and crazy, so you always go to minyan. So do me a favor. Just try to make sure that somebody says Kaddish every single day. Right? You can't do it, because my parents were both makbid, but find somebody. So where am I going to find somebody who's going to be able to do it? So I went to Harav Tights, and I said to him, I need a favor. Explain to him, my grandmother was after, he says to me, I know it. I'm going to have her in mind after the Mishnah Yomis. Back then, Rabbi Tights wasn't going to Israel yet, right? So I says, after the Mishnah Yomis. He says, okay, whichever kind of show. No, after the Mishnah Yomis. So that was that. So I forget, so, okay, it's very nice. You're like, oh, it's nice because this is a Kaddish, she's going Kiddush Hashem, and a grandson is teaching Torah, we're all learning Torah together. No, the Elif HaMagid says that there's a deeper reason for it. What's the reason? My grandmother gets the schus of Notzer Te'ena, Yochel Pagea, right? She was the Notzer Te'ena, she created the roots. Rabbi Teitz says, that's the schus for the Kaddish. Now, he didn't say it at the time. It takes 15 years to be a... Rav Shachter always tells us that, you know, it takes 40 years for a person to really be Omed Asof Daito Shel Rabo. Right? So, you know, I'm starting slowly and surely, but lehalacha, this is an important issue. So Rav Zilberstein writes in this last month's edition of the Vavei Amudim, but I found it earlier. It's in the Chashukei Chemed, in a Sefer on Masechta Sukkah, and Daphne Vavam Medbeis. So he also says, in this situation, the right of the minion is to the one who put it together. That, I believe, is a very big difference, if I may be so bold, than the guy who comes in and puts out a couple of chocolate chip cookies and a schnapps bottle and says, I have schus kadima because I'm fearing tikkun. Why is that? Because there, it's a minyan kavua of the shul. He's not the notzer te'ena. He's notzer high blood pressure. He's notzer, you know, an extra 30 pounds for the rabbi, right? All sorts of other goodies for some other people. And I'm not knocking the tikkun. The brachos are recited at a tikkun. That's what the tikkun's all about. But that doesn't give him a schus kadima, in my humble opinion, over somebody who has a right in advance. He didn't create the minyan. He doesn't have a right to take away the other person. So in this situation, when those types of funky situations come up, the Chafetz Chaim writes in Abbas Chesed in the second piece in Tet Zayin, he brings down. He says, if the reason we rush for the Kadeshim is because we want to find discuss. So in the Abbas Chesed, he says, doing Chesed on behalf of a Nifter, that's also a discuss. And Rav Zilberstein writes in the Vavei Amudim, he says, I just want you to know that one of the things I learned from my goner of Aaron Leib Steinman is, he said, Margala Bupume, one of the pearls that he used to say is, Nar Ha'isi Gam Zakanti, Rav Steinman lived a pretty long life, V'lo Ra'isi Abal Chesed Shalom Ne'ezav. I've never seen anybody, give up an Amud and see that the Tzidkus didn't pay him back. So Rav Zilberstein says, sometimes we get so crazy, in our lives. How many times is he? We used to have a guy who used to show up. He was he could have blocked for the Jets and probably improved their career the way he used to block the Yamed in the morning to make sure that he would have his chus to get to the Yamed. For us in our world, I think sometimes when we beg people's pardons, we have to first make sure that we understand who has the rights in this chus in advance. So again, on this third question, the answer is the notzer te'ena yochal pirya, right? The one who plants it, he has the chus, but that's only true if he planted, right? And in the situation where the planting is done by all of us together, that's why we have order. It's there to do what? It's there to be monea machlokas. And that's one of the things that we do in life. But of course, there's a general rule, and that's the situation that we saw over here also. Being able to be monea machlokas is a big deal among Jews. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll save you. Like always, I always say, Od chazon amoy, to the last couple of weeks, we've had all these extra pieces, and one day we'll have all the questions we left out. But we'll stop here. Okay, Adkan. Thank you, guys.